Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and I am not with my normal co-host, Chad Timmerman, our head coach, or Nate Pearson, our CEO. Instead, I'm with Phil Mooney. How you doing, Phil?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing great, man. You should probably explain to the listeners who you are.
I'm Phil Mooney. I am the manager and director of the H24 cycling team. That's the Herbalife presented by Mark Pro Nature's Bakery cycling team. We're a domestic elite team with USA Cycling, all Cat 1 riders racing all across the U.S. And internationally quite a bit.
Awesome. So we are in San Anselmo, California, so up in the Marin area, for those that don't know where that is. And we're at a team camp right now, right?
That's right. We're at our team camp to kick off the year here for the squad and get the guys all ready to build the team and to get trained and ready for some of our upcoming races.
Sweet. Awesome. So today, we're actually going to pick your brain on what it's like to be a director of a cycling team. And why a team should have a director. We'll go into team strategy. We'll go into how you select races, how you select riders, things that you've learned as a DS that you wish you knew when you back when you raced. Lots of different things. But let's touch on that first. Some of your background, because Phil, you're not a normal team director. And I say that in a good way, because you are fast. You are really fast. In fact, you're even faster than some of the riders at times on your team.
Oh, at times. Lucky in the off season, maybe. I was a racer myself. I got into racing bikes, competitive cycling on the roadside when I was in college. I then continued racing through graduate school, turned professional then in graduate school, and was a pro myself for a few years after that. And then I retired and got real slow and missed the bike a lot and decided to start this team and then built this team 3 years ago. And we've been going strong since then.
Awesome. And it's a pretty strong team. For those that have seen The Chase, it's a video that we've produced. Dave Christensen, also one of the members of your team, an extremely fast masters racer. Dave produced that video on Justin Rossi, and Justin Rossi is part of this team as well.
That's right. And that was a cool video.
It was pretty cool. So if anybody, hopefully that gives everyone a point of reference on where exactly this team comes from and everything else. So a couple of things I want to cover really quick. You mentioned that, you know, you wanted to get back into cycling, so you became a director of a team. But did you have any prior experience in that? What made you think that you wanted to herd the chickens instead of just be one of the chickens again?
Oh, that is a good question. My last couple years of racing, I was on a team called, at the time, that's not around anymore, called Jameis Hoggins-Berman and Jameis Sutterholm. And on that team, I started just getting a lot more interested in interfacing with sponsors. At the time, it's because I was one of the guys who spoke English best on the team. It was quite an international team.
Right, okay.
Also, then, you know, just through that, sort of naturally started to begin helping with social media, started doing some race reports, again, because I had the command of the English language, which was at a premium at the time.
Right.
And really liked it. And I really liked the interfacing with the sponsors. And that's sort of how I got interested. In general, I also like organizing things. I like running things. I like having teams. So it was a pretty natural fit when it came time to do this.
So slightly less conventional. You are a director, but you're also the manager because you're managing the sponsorship side of things as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. So there's sort of two main roles that you need to do for a team. So a manager is the one who sort of sets up all the business side of the team. So the business side of, we're known to the world as the H24 cycling team. Mm-hmm. We're known to the government as Mooney Cycling LLC. So we're a LLC that has contracts, written contracts with all our sponsors. So this gotcha. Covers everything from our cash sponsors to our vehicles, to our insurance, to all our equipment, to all the traveling. And that is sort of the managing side of the team. So I would say the business side of the team is the managing side of the team, the financial side of the team. The director side of the team is then the interfacing with the guys and out there on the road with them and in the team car and following them and telling them what to do in the races and selecting the rosters for the races and things like that.
So although that seems like a logical differentiation, I'm sure that a lot of people listening to this, it's probably beneficial to separate the two because the majority of the teams that we belong to usually just have a manager who also doubles as a director. In your case, though, you're doing both, but you're doing both expertly, which is pretty awesome. Let's get into the director side of things a little more.
Sure.
So what are the traditional roles of a team director in a cycling team?
So the director of the cycling team is the one who interfaces with the riders. Okay. They're the ones that tend to be very knowledgeable about the racing, the racers, the different courses they do, the type of rider that is suitable for each course, the races themselves and how they tend to play out and what you can expect. So sort of the brains behind the racing side of the operations.
Okay.
Oftentimes those are ex-riders because you have to be able to learn about bike racing. So it is, it's pretty normal to have an ex-pro rider be a director. It's a little less normal for an ex-pro rider to be the manager of a team. I sort of just do both because I like both.
There we go. If you were to decide or try to pick some characteristics, so somebody's listening to this and they do manage a team and they're wondering if they should have an official director or they're wondering what role they fulfill, what characteristics of a team do you think require that team to have a director? Do you feel like just the average Joe team needs one or?
I don't feel like the average Joe team needs one. I think you need to have a director when you start racing at a high enough level that, teamwork is very important, although I guess teamwork is always very important in road cycling. Teamwork that requires the sacrifice of your other team members and for them to lose their race or to drive across the whole country and you tell them their job is to do something the first hour of the race and not even finish. That's when you start to need a director to make those tough calls, you know. There's always teamwork, but everyone's sort of going for it. And then when you need to be such a united front that you are totally racing together, sacrificing your chances for the good of your teammates and fully selling out for them, that's the time when you start to really need a director.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's get into team camp. So, and I guess we'll define the timeline. We're starting at the beginning of the year, and then we'll go through actually how we implement as a director in these races and how that happens as we go on. But starting off first, what is the objective of team camps?
So the objective of team camps, there's sort of a lot of them. And all these times that you make all the effort to get these guys together, you know, we have more than 30 people here this weekend with both riders and all our sponsors and representatives and the media people involved, our photographers and the videographer. Starts to be a lot of people. So that's a lot of effort. So you want to get a lot out of it these weekends. So they're pretty jam-packed. And so we're doing both team building and helping our racing and interfacing with our sponsors and learning about their products. Mm. So from the team side, the guys are getting to know each other, comfortable. We do some specific drills on the bike. Yesterday is the day everyone arrived, so it was a shorter day.
Nice of you, by the way, to do this.
It was also raining really, really hard. That day we did a time trial in between the team, just sort of to see where guys can stand in the time trial. So we
welcome to team camp.
That's right. Ready to suffer.
Yeah.
We picked a course that's, you know, 25 or 26 minutes. And that is good, both because it helps me see where the guys are at. Mm-hmm. It helps them know where they're at. You know, they see what their teammates are doing and they know where they need to be. It's also just a good icebreaker to camp because everyone's like nervous beforehand. And as everyone knows, who does a hard effort, there's a lot of camaraderie after that.
Yep.
And so it's like a good way to settle in and tell your battle stories from your individual 25 minutes of suffering in the rain.
That's a smart way to do it. So I'm going to bring up the example of what most teams tend to, and I'm talking average Joe teams. Team camps are, I think, a great idea for a number of reasons. Like you said, the camaraderie. It also is a great opportunity to build similar fitness across the team, which can really help. But I find that a lot of the time they show up and they live extravagantly and they just work their way into camp slowly on the first day. But that's actually probably a good technique, is to kind of, you know, lay everything out there, put them through a really tough experience first thing. So then they are, number one, there's commiseration, but then number two, that will give everybody, and I'm not saying a pecking order in a negative way at all, I'm saying a pecking order in understanding who is where and who needs to work on what.
And that pecking order is often helpful in camps. There is sort of a tradition in camps that everyone just goes out and they ride so hard that they ride too hard, you know, you're just like slamming up every single hill, which as you know, a trainer wrote, is not the best way to get yourself fit. You need to follow specific workouts, which I'm sure we'll get into this later. That's how I plan our weekend too, is not just going out there and kicking each other in the teeth.
Yeah.
We do specific workouts. So for example, today we're going to do 3 30-minute efforts, where they know that in those 3 30-minute efforts, they're going to be going really hard. We're going to be rotating with 4 guys through, sort of simulating a breakaway situation. Gets you used to riding with your teammates, gets you used to riding fast. It's sort of that motor pacing-like simulation of changing of small accelerations to keep the speed really high. And that's a lot better, and that's good focus training, which is different than just going and sprinting up every single hill that you see for, you know, 5 or 6 hours. So you could show that you're the strongest, although you don't really know who's racing you at each exactly. hill and who's going all out. And so you define these efforts a lot better. And I think you get a better training benefit from that as well.
That's smart. So when you're designing, for example, these 3 30-minute efforts that'll be happening today, which I'm very much looking forward to. I can't wait for that. But when you're defining these 3 30-minute efforts, are you defining that because that is the type of fitness that they'll need because they do road racing? Would you change that if your team was primarily doing crits or something else?
Yeah, you certainly could change that. Our team does everything, and most teams at a high level in the United States are doing everything. They're doing road races, they're doing stage racing, they're doing crit racing. There's a lot of overlap between the two, but there is a lot of specificity there as well. In the beginning of the year, and we're here in the beginning of the year, you know, just getting that broad aerobic base is important. So it's a pretty safe bet to say that you could just slam it for half an hour and it's going to be good for you,
yeah.
no matter what, as time goes on
right.
later in the year.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's cover that then. You do multiple, and I guess it's not necessary, but I know you have done multiple camps in 1 year. You do this one that's usually the early winter camp and it's traditionally been in Northern California. It's one time you were in the Auburn area, which is known for some really steep climbs, and you can't go 10 miles without getting 1,000 feet of climbing there. It's just simply impossible. But now we're over in Marin. You also have done camps in Mammoth Mountain, which is up at elevation. You're at 8,000 feet minimum in that area pretty much. And you can climb all the way up to, 11,000 feet pretty much. So how do you decide to have another camp, and what is the motive of that other camp?
Yeah. So I think this goes back to lots of competing goals at camp. This beginning camp, the training is very important, but what we didn't touch is me on a team manager side. Even more important at the beginning of the year is this is when they're getting all their new gear. They're on new bikes. They have sponsors telling them about their new bikes. They're listening to presentations from the sponsors till deep in the night. I think we stopped at 9:30 or 10 last yeah. night. You know, everyone's pretty tired. So it's more than riding, and we are doing lots of good riding, but there's more than that too. There's
right.
the whole sponsor and the media component. Mm. We then have more specific camps later in the year, usually 2 of them, mm-hmm. Oftentimes at elevation. I guess last year we did one around here, right in the same area in Marin, mm-hmm. Which I love the riding here. I also live 2 miles down the road,
that's pretty
and
nice.
I have a newborn, so I like to stay around home.
Yep.
And then we do the one in Mammoth at elevation before some races that we have at elevation. Those events, there are less sponsor obligations. Our sponsors are always invited, mm-hmm. but they know that those camps are for training.
Yes.
And for training alone. So at those camps, we're coming and just working for the races, the specific goals we need. And so it's a little different of a team camp.
Right.
So the Mammoth Lakes one we have is, it's 10 days long. It's a full, hard week of training that we've done.
Yeah.
And we've done that for the last 2 years.
Wow.
And we do that in a period of time before we're about to do some races at elevation. So guys are used to doing races at elevation. We're also doing that before some races that have some really long climbs. You know, in Mammoth, it's a great spot because you can climb flat out for an hour and a half if you want to.
Exactly.
There are not many places in the U.S. where you can do climbs that long.
Right.
At a great training base and sleep at, you know, we're sleeping at 7,500 feet there. It's a
right.
it's a phenomenal spot. So we do those other camps, and I schedule these other camps when we have holes in our schedule. So
makes sense.
Just as the racing schedule gets built, sometimes, say maybe the month of August is just lean. You know, you have, half the guys could go race somewhere, but
right.
the other half needs something. And getting together, you ride harder, you train hard, you really focus on it. We have our soigneur there, so the guys are getting massages, they're eating right, they're training right, and come out of those a lot stronger.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's really like a boot camp, that one is.
It is like a, it's a fun boot camp.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
everyone thinks boot camps are fun. I probably.
So that's, I think that if you're listening to this and you're wondering if your team, if you are directing a team, or if you're just a part of a team, should have a team camp, hopefully that gives you some specific direction as to how to carry one out or the objectives you'd have. I know that it changes my perspective on team camps, so it's going to be good. Let's get into the director side of things a little more in terms of racing. So let's start before we even get into the race. How do you select races as a director of a team? And let's say for your team specifically.
So again, this is sort of the combination of being a manager and a director.
Yeah.
As a manager, I'm given a budget and I'm tasked with running the best team possible with that budget.
Right.
Obviously, you could choose a very wide range of race schedules. You know, we could go. I'm sure they have lots of good bike racing, in Puerto Vallarta or in Jamaica, and we could fly everybody down there and we could spend a lot of money doing yeah. those. And so you have to think about what's going to get you the farthest for your money and pick races that way. So part of that is just the economics of it and yeah. just finding races that sort of help your way. We race a lot internationally. For example, we just did, even before training camp, we sent a full squad down to the Dominican Republic for a 9-day UCI stage race.
Rough.
Financially, that team, that entire race cost me less than sending a squad to the Chico stage race, which
wow.
was, which, you know, was, it's 100 miles from here,
yeah.
you know? So because that helps get the schedule too, to see the, you know, what you could, how you could get the best bang for your buck.
Makes sense.
So you think of that, and then you also think of, the races that you have riders on the team that where they're going to succeed. Mm. You know, if you have no pure climbers, you don't need to go to Tour of the Gila, which has hour long climbs
right.
every day for a week.
Right.
You know, and if you have no sprinters, you don't need to go up to BC Super Week, which is a series of 10 days of crit racing
yep.
that ends in a bunch sprint every day. And from knowing the races and reading about the races, and you do have to remember we're bringing in these guys all have a huge amount of racing experience themselves because they're top riders. And so I talk with them a lot, especially I lean heavily on my team captains a lot.
Right.
To learn about that, I can select a schedule. Again, you know, logistical concerns come into place. You know, it's hard to race in Washington, D.C. one day and then race in California the next.
Right.
You know, so we try to plan schedules where we sweep across the country. You know, for example, this summer we're going to go to a race in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at Tulsa Tough, and then we're going from there to the Nature Valley Grand Prix in Minnesota, and then we go to Tour of America's Dairyland, which is in Wisconsin, and then we go to the National Championships, which are in Kentucky, and then we drive back after that. You know, so you're
gotcha.
Sort of sweeping across, and we're racing one time on the way back, too.
Nice.
And so you do sort of plan out the big races that way. Ideally, the governing body of the sport would help these teams plan races out that way. And in some senses, they try to do that, although it doesn't always work. There's a lot
sure.
of there's a lot of coast-to-coast stuff, which just it really isn't feasible. The travel, both financially and for the guys, just, you know, the travel time on the road. You know, no one wants to do that
no.
anymore and fly across the country every weekend.
Right. So let's talk about the rider selection then. What tools do you use to select which riders will go to which races? And you can use a specific example if you'd like.
Yeah, it's funny. I get that question a lot.
Yeah.
People ask me a lot of, you know, how the heck do you choose the guys for the race? And my answer is it's just easy. It's always easy. You just know the guys that are going to the race that they're going to be good at. You know,
yeah.
and the guys know, and most everybody have a pretty good assessment of themselves as a rider and a pretty good assessment of their teammates as a rider too, and their strengths and their weaknesses. So it is a very, very rare occasion that someone is bothered by a team selection. You know, they almost all understand. There's enough respect both with me and with their teammates that they understand who's going to the races. So I say that job is easy. You know,
right.
if it's, you know, if you're a climber, you're going to go to the races with climbs. And if you're
yep.
a crit racer, you're probably going to go to the crits.
And how do you decide that? Because I could see in your case, it's pretty diplomatic, but I could see some teams where it might be a little more tough. So what tools would you use? What markers would you use, or what key things would you be looking for? Is it just a race results thing, or are you looking at their training, or how do you do it?
You are also fulfilling different roles on the team.
Yeah.
You know, again, you don't need 8 sprinters on the team. You need one.
Yeah.
And then you need some lead out guys, and then you need some engines that can bring the race back together so they have a chance to sprint to begin with.
Right.
And so you do need to think about the roster that you're sending, and that it is a complete roster to race a complete bike race.
Right.
So I do think of that as I go, and we talk to the guys as I go. I have two great team captains on this team, Chris HD and Sam Bassetti are our team captains. I lean on them very heavily just to help gauge the pulse of the guys, how it's going, their assessment. We talk after every race about what we think of each rider, you know, and these things are, it gets to be pretty casual. We're not like discussing for half an hour each guy and what they did, but it's like, oh yeah, you know, I noticed Justin was ripping it and he was really good. That was cool. You know, and this builds up and you just sort of know, and I know all my guys and I know how they're doing. And I have a lot of communication. I call each guy every week, you know, so I have a lot of communication with the guys and I know how they're doing. I know what they're doing. I know what their goals are. I do certainly take into account their goals. You know, if it's your hometown race, you're going to go to your hometown race. You know, if it's like your goal of the season, you're almost certainly going to go to the goal of your season.
Right. And now in your case, you have pretty, like you said, distinct roles with the riders on the teams. Willie Myers is the sprinter, right? Uh-huh. And Willie knows that if he's being brought to a race and he has his lead out guys and everything else, chances are things are going to be, or the team is going to have that plan to lead him out, right? Or set him up, I should say.
Chances are, yeah.
Yeah.
Racing is unpredictable, but yeah.
Right. So what happens though if you have somebody that doesn't want to, or I guess somebody that, or how do you control the team's objective when they go to a race? Do you tell them beforehand, this is what the team is going to do? Do you give them plan A, plan B, plan C, or do you just trust that they know what they do best and it will work out? How do you?
Oh, we certainly plan these things out. Yeah. You know, I would say usually there's like a plan A, a plan B, and then after that, you've probably had a tough race.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
When you get to plan C, we're probably just scraping by at that point.
Time to check it in.
But they know going in. You know, who's the leader, what we're going to be trying to do. They also know that in bike racing, things change a lot. Maybe a breakaway goes and they just give them a 10-minute leash. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you found your GC guy and you have a GC concern in that race. These guys have all raced enough that they know for a team to have success, you have to race together as a team.
Right.
Sometimes you have to sacrifice your own chances. Often you have to sacrifice your own chances. And I think they all, not only are their teammates on our team, specifically, we do this on purpose. I mean, these guys are friends. You know, I don't know how much background noise you could pick up, but we're like 100 feet from where they're all hanging out now, and there's just nothing but laughs going on there. And they have a lot of fun together. And so they're happy to sacrifice their chances because they're happy to see their friend and their teammate succeed.
Right, that makes sense. Ooh, bringing in coffee for everybody. Very nice. So let's cover one thing here. I want to talk about how you developed a strategy or a race strategy and how that went for specific races. So thinking of highlights when the team has done well last year, Willie won a lot of sprints last year.
Uh-huh.
Where was,
he sure did.
Yeah, he did. Where was a race where you feel like the team followed the strategy well, and how did you create that strategy and how they execute it?
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot. And when you're talking about a race, you know, especially because Willie won a lot of races, and those are, when your sprinter wins a race, it's usually because the team has done very well to get him there.
Yes.
And so those are good success stories. You know, I could think, because we're here, I could think about a local race in particular. There's one, you know, just a small local race. This is not a huge deal race, but there was a race in Sassoon. And, you know, for that to happen, Willie won that race. Honestly, he almost coasted across the line because he had such a good lead out from the guys.
Wow.
And Matt Chat had given him such a lead out. You know, he had like 10 bike lengths going to the final corner. I think Matt Chat coasted across the line with his hands up for like third still. You know? And so that's a race that gets done. So in a race like that, how this race in particular played out. So this is a crit. I think it's just a 4-corner crit, you know.
Okay.
Course is like, you know, maybe 3/4 of a mile long, pretty straightforward. You know, a breakaway goes up the road. It's a nice way for this race to be controlled. I'm on the sidelines there with my little whiteboard.
Nice.
And
do you hold that whiteboard out for the riders to see?
Yes, yes.
That's a good tip.
If I have something to say, I could have the whiteboard. I could also yell at them if there's not too big of a crowd around. There's a lot of different ways to communicate.
That's really helpful. So you give them time gaps, or what do you give them? What do you write down?
Yeah, usually time gaps. Okay. You know, it's hard. You don't want to try to give them too much. They are racing their bikes. Yeah. They're coming by you at 30 miles an hour. But,
yeah.
But you know, they'll see 38 seconds, or they'll see, you know, whoever right. I want to start working, you know, or like, you know, put Tori to the front, kind of things like that.
Makes sense.
And so we'll be there. And then, you know, in this particular race, I bet there was a group that was probably 30 or 40 seconds up the road, which is a pretty significant amount.
Yeah.
That's like half a lap when you're on
the three quarter mile course. Yeah.
And, so I'm on the side with, you know, 10 or 12 laps to go. And I'm like, all right, guys, time to chase, you know, we're going to ride five. So we're going to put five of our eight guys
yep.
on the front. And so our five or eight guys reel it in. And so then, you know, they do that lap after lap after lap, five or six laps.
And every time I'm giving them time through, gaps,
They're just rotating through at threshold as hard as they can.
Yeah,
they're ripping around this course really
right.
fast. But yes, they are rotating through. No sacrificial pulls yet.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that was the point there.
And so they're going hard. The field is totally strung out behind them. We are absolutely in control of that race, you know, and every time, you know, I see the laps, it's like consistently coming down, you know, it's like whatever it is, 4 or 5 seconds a lap. Mm-hmm. It's coming closer. I'm sitting there like, okay, yeah, this is going to come back. Let's try to time this right.
Right.
So you want to time the catch right. So this breakaway has been going, and you want to time it pretty close to the end so the speeds are high enough that another break can't go in form. You want this break to be the last one. Then it's going to come together in the last two or three laps.
Right.
And then you're going to sprint.
Okay.
Which is exactly what the guys did perfectly. They're pretty dialed at this.
So one quick thing on that. I find that a lot of people exhaust themselves so much, a team or individuals, once they catch the break, they just simply don't have enough to get past them.
Yeah, which is pretty common. So in our situation, we had five guys riding. Then we had three guys totally fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So these five guys took them to the last lap. And then it's time to go really, really hard again in that last lap.
Yeah.
So we've got three guys who haven't taken a pull all race.
Yep.
That have just been sitting on. They've been protected. They have not been fighting for wheels. They have not been bumping with the jumble behind them. Their team is on the front. There's respect given to the lead out behind them, the sprinters behind them. So in this case, we had Josh. Then we had Matt Chat. Then we had Josh. Then we had Willie in a row. Willie being our sprinter. And so with a lap or three quarters of a lap to go, Matt Chat hits it, you know, and the guys know he's going to hit it. He signals to them that he's going to hit it. Nobody else knows. And so he just starts, you know, just does this monster 30-second pull.
Yeah.
By the end of that, there's a great video of this. You know, you could see it's our three guys and then the rest of the field. You know, so then, you know, maybe into probably at that point 600 meters to go or so.
Yeah.
Josh takes over. So Matt swings off. So he's done. He's totally sacrificed himself. He coasts across the line in last place, having won that race for the team. Josh then takes off, does that 300 meters, 400 meters. Willie does 200 meters. They win.
Right.
So I guess it was Willie and Josh first and second. But Matt is the one who won that bike race for the team. You know, he did this great pull. So at half a lap to go, and the average spectator probably wouldn't have seen that.
Right.
But our guys, you know, they got such a perfect lead out. It was a perfect execution. They come around the final corner. They just win, you know. They just win, and Willie doesn't even have to sprint his hardest, you know.
There we are.
They have plenty of time to post up and to celebrate. And that, I mean, you see something like that, and that is a team that's dialed. The lead out, that was really dialed.
So. Right. It's all well put together. And that's something that you, I would assume, in your case, perhaps your riders are already practicing that, but is that something that you deliberately practice with the team?
Yeah, we'll practice that at camp.
Races,
camp. We practice that at camp. We had a third training camp last year too. We had a little sprinter boot camp.
Nice.
I had to kick their butts a little bit. and they went out and they practiced that a lot, and they ended up getting really comfortable with each other.
Okay.
You know, and those final guys do have to be very comfortable with each other and be willing to be close, to be willing to trust the decisions that your lead out man is going to take. You know, mm-hmm. Willie is at the mercy of these guys, and he needs to, if he goes into the sprint in 12th place, it doesn't matter how strong he is, he's not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he has to trust that these guys are going to get him there in the right position.
Yeah.
And so they do a lot of that, practicing together, getting the acceleration speed right. You know, the accelerating is hard. You know, it's, even in your draft, it's hard. And so you have to you know, ramp it up slowly, get your speed going. You just sort of get the cues and the sign of when your lead out guy, you know, he's about to fail and it's time to go. And,
right.
You know, you've discussed which way you're going to pull off afterwards at the end, you know, when the lead out guy's swinging off and getting all that really dialed. And these guys are pretty dialed. Now they've been racing together for a long time. So they're quite comfortable.
Yeah, they are. They're a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Let's cover, just to kind of close this one out, let's cover things that as a rider, once you became a DS eventually, right? You became a director. Let's not feign the director sportif thing. We're in America, right? So we're directors. What were things as a rider that you saw directors do that you tried to be conscious of and you really wanted to apply that? In other words, like what mistakes did you see directors do as a rider?
So I'll start off by saying I had some great directors, especially at the end. I had a really phenomenal director in Sebastian Alexander. The thing that I really try to do and that is sometimes missed is giving credit to everyone on the team for the job that they do. Oftentimes you just see the winner and they're the ones that are getting the love. And it's like, you know, good job that you won. But I will then see, okay, you won because Tori, you know, crushed it for 10 miles. He did not want to be on the front there, but he just had to go with that.
Yep.
And he really dug deep and he got popped with 30 miles to go. He's still not even to the finish line yet.
Right.
But you're like, man, Tori, that was a huge effort and a good race.
Right.
And so seeing the work that all the team does and recognizing people for that work is what I try to do.
So. Okay. So now let's flip it on its head. What are mistakes that you made or saw made as a rider that now as a DS you wish riders would do? So the common mistakes that you try to correct as a DS and riders.
Let's see, as a DS, the common mistakes.
We're talking strategy, we're talking execution or preparation or race selection.
I mean,
anything.
You often see selfish riding.
Okay.
You see, and I just have I do not tolerate that.
Right.
Period. I don't even care if you win, if it was selfish riding, you know, and that was not what we're supposed to do. It's like that is a thing that you should not do. And I just don't, I mean, that's a sure way to not be invited back on the team the next year. I mean, that's just, you know, maybe you get one bye, but after that, you know, we just don't deal with that. That's not how you can race. That's sort of a bad example though. A lot of the things that I see now as I'm running a team with riders that I would focus on is more the managing side. Is I think that riders don't realize how many eyes are on them, how many people are watching them, how their sponsors are watching them, and how they can conduct themselves both in and off the bike. And I'm talking about social media. I'm talking about photos. The importance of interacting with sponsors, the importance of, you know, talking to the fans out there, things like that that's what I really see that lots of riders miss. And as a manager now, I'm like, I like the race results. I also like the people that are very active on social media on our team.
Makes sense.
That really helps out a lot.
Yeah.
How powerful that can be even for the future of your career as a rider. Lots of people think, okay, you know, I want to make it to the next level, so I need to win this, this, and this. And I say, you need to make it to the next level. You need to win this, this, and this while making your sponsors love you, having a good message to the team. You know, if I'm looking at two riders and one has a blog that 10,000 people read, you're like, oh, this is the one who's going to get the spot on the team.
Makes sense.
You know, we got one who just consistently pumps out amazing photos and is good at telling the story of their ride. That's the person that you want on the team. And that's the person that the sponsors are happy to have. The directors are happy to have.
Makes sense. So let's say you don't have a team and you don't have a director. You don't have anything else like that. What is the best advice that you would give that rider in terms of strategy in a race? What should they do if they don't have a team and they don't have the structure that you guys have?
Yeah, you have to be canny.
Okay.
I mean, it's bike racing is a team sport. So if you don't have a team, it's hard. At this level, you know, basically everyone is having a team at our level, so it doesn't apply as much. And the guys that don't have a team, it's because they're probably some superstar pro and all their teammates are international.
Right.
And so they're just going to be fine because they're good at racing bikes. At lower levels, it's hard. The racing is hard without a team. And it's the reason because of that is there's so much that's out of your control. You could be the strongest rider in the race, but the strongest rider in the race can't go with every single move. Mm-hmm. And if you miss the move, you miss the move. You know, there's not like you're going to solo bridge and then win the sprint.
Right.
No. So yeah, that's tough. I think if you are riding alone, one thing you really need to make sure you do is to know the other racers that you're racing against. Mm. So then you know who to look out for, and then you can identify which moves are serious, both based on the composition, like the team composition and what's going to happen tactically there, but also based on the individual rider. Okay, is that the team leader up the road? Okay, this is their move. Right. This is what you need to be too. But at the end of the day, it's hard.
So know the riders then.
You know the riders, but you join a team. Okay. If you're not on a team, you should probably join a team.
So let's talk about the team part, and this will be the last one. If you have a team, but you don't have a director, and you guys are just more of a team that I guess maybe you don't have as specific of objectives or anything else, but what things could a team do that doesn't have a director that you think would be beneficial? For example, I mean, we see a lot of teams that are masters teams, and they're a group of guys that love to get together and race and ride, but they don't have a director.
What is the thing
that you would do?
You should name a road captain.
Okay.
So a road captain is basically a director that's also racing.
Okay.
with you. Have one person that you nominate, you elect to run the shot so you can race together as a cohesive unit.
Okay.
So say you've got your eight guys in the race and you say, okay, this particular guy, which it's often good to have the guy that's the road captain not be the guy that you're going to win.
Okay.
Not be your team leader. Be another guy that's out there and who can call the shot. Say, all right, guys, we need to get together to chase now. All right, guys, we need to move all up together because we're going to turn right and it's going to be a big crosswind and we're going to make our own echelon and we're going to go through there.
So what characteristics do you look for in a team leader or a team captain? Sorry.
Someone who's respected by everybody and is not afraid to make a call.
Awesome.
It's pretty easy. And in cycling, you know, if you have your team together, you just need to make a call. Oftentimes it doesn't really matter what the call is. As long as your team's riding together, you're going to be doing well.
Right.
You could do well if you do this. You could do well if you do that. The only thing that will be poorly is if you do nothing. You
know, makes sense.
So that's
awesome. Well, thank you, Phil. We're about to head out on a ride ourselves. So
great.
About to get my legs torn off.
To it. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. If you want to send in for the next normal episode of the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast, send in your questions. You can do so at trainerroad.com/podcast. And you can find us all over social channels or whatever podcast outlet you listen to podcasts. Thanks, Phil. Chat soon.
Thank you.